Casey. Ms. Bennett.
Good morning. May it please the Court, my client, Mr. Hussein, has been languishing in detention for more than 2 years. This is despite the fact that he's a lawful permanent resident who has no criminal convictions, he has substantial challenges to his removal, and he's been granted relief under the Convention Against Torture.
So now, the Board of Immigration Appeals has approved or has upheld the order of removal, is that correct?
That is true, Your Honor, although that decision is, of course...
Not although. Now, when was that?
That they ruled on October 15th, if I'm correct.
Just a few days ago. Weeks ago. 2 weeks ago.
Ruled about a month and a half ago.
So now you're going to file a petition for review in this court?
The petition for review has already been filed, and in addition, a stay of removal.
There are two of them, right?
There are two of them because after the initial one was filed, the government filed a motion to dismiss, citing a recent VA decision saying that, based on the timing, that we should have filed after the BIA remanded to the immigration judge for final entry of the order. So there are actually two. The second was a protective one. They're both pending before this court, and the court has granted a stay of removal in connection with both.
But now we've held in the Bolanti case very recently that when the proceeding is in this court, in a petition to review, there's no release. There's no bond. You're detained.
Your Honor, the Bolanti case was...
Initial review of the denial of release.
Your Honor, the Bolanti case was concerning the Court of Appeals, quote-unquote, inherent power to release a prisoner on, release an immigrant on bail pending the petition for review. That is a very different type of issue than what's here.
I don't see the difference. I mean, it was different, you know, before November 17th or whenever, but it isn't different now. It's turned into a Bolanti case. There's a final order of removal, but administratively final, but it's now in the court, and we have no power to order someone released while the petition for review is under consideration.
Respectfully, Your Honor, this case, this challenge, which is a habeas challenge, we're not seeking...
I don't get the habeas. It was a habeas corpus challenge. Now it's a challenge to what has been ordered removed, and now it's in the... And you could ask us to accelerate our consideration of his petition for review if you wanted.
Well, that's what you ought to be asking us to do. This case was put on an expedited basis, but now everything has changed with the final board action here. So why wouldn't we? We're going to be back here again on this case, no matter what we do here, aren't we?
Your Honor, you will be back here on the merits of his removal case shortly.
Right.
However, the critical facts to this habeas challenge have not changed. He continues to be subjected to mandatory detention under Section 1226. His challenge is a habeas challenge.
No, I don't think that's true. I think he's under mandatory detention because a final order of removal has been entered against him. And the Attorney General could admit him to bail, but if he doesn't, we don't have the power to reverse that.
Returning to the authority question, Your Honor, this type of challenge, this habeas challenge to the lawfulness of his detention under the Constitution and as a matter of statutory construction
That's moot, right? Suppose that 6 months ago you had said, look, this interminable detention is intolerable, and the board and the immigration court should speed up the underlying removal proceedings so this fellow isn't languishing in jail. And if the board had responded and hurried up, there would be a final order of removal, and the case would then be in our court where you can't get bail. So,
Your Honor, the challenge that we're bringing is exactly the type of challenge that the Supreme Court addressed in Zedvitas,
Zedvitas is a completely different case. Zedvitas is a case where after the final order of removal and exhaustion of all judicial remedies, you're ready to be sent off, you know, but no one will take you. So then you just sit there. And the Supreme Court says, unless you're a danger to the United States, you have to be released. So that's a very narrow decision. But this doesn't make any sense, right? Because, or the orderly way to think about it is, we've now, it's unfortunate that there have been these delays, but now he's in this petition to review stage, and as Judge Evans said, I'm sure we would be happy to accelerate our consideration of the petition for review and, you know, make the government file its brief fast and so on and decide it quickly. But it seems to me that's the best we can do for your client.
Your Honor, when I said that it was exactly the same type of case, I was referring back to your initial question about whether there's authority to order
his... It's all kind of trivial. I mean, What if we ordered him admitted to bail, also ordered an accelerated proceeding on petition for review, so maybe he'd be out on bail for a month before we decided the case, right?
Your Honor, he may not be removable at all because he has substantial challenge to his removal in addition to his
grant
of relief.
Sure, if he wins his case, yeah, then he's fine.
And, Your Honor, it's not... Respectfully, it's not at all trivial to him, nor as a matter of due process, given that he's been detained for more than 2 years.
Well, it's trivial in the sense that it greatly complicates things if we have to be considering his habeas corpus application after he is being detained in a completely different procedural setting.
As we've explained in our brief, actually, as a matter of statute, he continues to be under, at this stage, he continues to be detained under the same statute he's been detained, but because he's been granted a stay of removal, and the statute makes clear it's the same statute as it was before. And then more fundamentally
well,
than
just
that...
just excessively legalistic.
But more
because
if
he'd never had a habeas corpus proceeding, he'd be detained, and he couldn't get bail because the final order of removal, administratively final, has been entered.
The government is trying to subject him to mandatory detention, saying that the statute authorizes that. And our statutory construction argument is that the statute can't be read to authorize that without raising a substantial constitutional doubt. And there's no question that this court has authority. Whichever statute you would look at, but
we weren't concerned with how long the person had been detained, right?
Nor was the question in Belanti whether or not the statute invoked to justify the detention actually authorized that detention. The question was the court's...
The statute that authorizes the detention is the statute that governs review after an order of removal is entered.
Even if the court were to...
Back to the habeas corpus provisions.
Even if the court were to disagree with us that the governing statute is 1226... I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, never mind.
Even if the court were to disagree with us that 1226C continues to govern and concluded that it was 1231, which is the post-final order statute, that statute doesn't authorize prolonged detention where removal is not reasonably foreseeable any more than the pre-final order statute. And the question here in terms of this court's authority to reach that question is, or one of the questions is there's also a pure
but
constitutional
if we
question.
If affirm the order to remove, then the question will be... a Zedidis question, because once the order to remove is affirmed, and if there's no country that will take the person, then he, you know, he's not a danger to the United States. He gets out after 6 months.
Well, it's a real question whether or not it will be affirmed or not, Your Honor. That's something that this court will determine.
Of course it's a question, but that would be an argument against Belanti. That would say, well, whenever someone has a reasonable shot at reversal, he ought to be out on bail.
Well, there are a combination of factors here that render his detention both violative of due process and also not authorized by statute. One is the length of detention that's already gone on. Another is whether or not it's really reasonably foreseeable that he can be removed.
This length of we have a ramshackle immigration system. And we have a bar, the immigration bar, which generally is on the slow side of these cases. It's very rare for them to want a speedy determination.
That certainly hasn't been the case in this situation, Your Honor.
I know, but what are we supposed to do as a practical matter? Are we supposed to figure out whether the the alien is stalling in order to get this, you know, benefit of your due process argument, or where the immigration service is simply overwhelmed and can't decide these cases, or the judges are busy. It's a mess. I don't want to get into that.
Well, the salient facts on that issue, in this case, Your Honor, they're not actually that complicated. I mean, for example, in terms of the amount of time that it took to decide his case, it took a year after the hearings in his removal case were decided for the immigration judge to issue a decision, and notably, that was only after...
It's extremely common.
Meanwhile, he was being subjected to detention and not being allowed out. I would mention, and you know, we mentioned in the brief, obviously, the immigration judge has found that Mr. Hussein should be entitled to release, that he's not a flight risk.
The reason he wasn't released was this link to this so-called terrorist group, right?
Well, the reason was because the government said he was, and the BIA said he was subjected, he's governed by 1226C. But that statute doesn't authorize, I mean, there are a number of reasons why that statute, in fact, doesn't authorize his detention. He doesn't actually fall within 1226C. But
there was a determination that he was a terrorist, as it's defined in the statute, right?
There was a determination that he was ineligible for certain forms of immigration relief. Those are among the issues that are being challenged in the petition for review.
And challenged, but there was a ground for detaining him.
There was no ground for detaining him because he didn't satisfy either the statutory prerequisites of 1226C I'm sorry?
Why not?
There are three reasons why he didn't satisfy. I mean, first of all, the statute itself requires certain threshold criteria to be satisfied in terms of there's a charging requirement, which we explain, and there's a release requirement.
So why is a charge better than a finding? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, we're not arguing it's better than a finding, Your Honor. We're just arguing that at a minimum, this statute requires that.
Hyper-technical stuff.
Those are legal arguments about statutory application, but what's certainly not...
The problem with this immigration law is absurdly complex. And you're making it worse.
Your Honor,
very legalistic arguments.
Your Honor, what's not complex in this case is that as a matter of due process and as a matter of constitutional doubt, which is our fundamental statutory construction argument...
Such a make-weight, constitutional doubt.
Constitutional doubt is exactly why the Supreme Court in Zedvitas and Your Honor, the Supreme Court in Zedvitas and Clark versus Martinez relied on precisely that doctrine to interpret...
They say that, right? But
and they interpreted a statute that is exactly analogous to the statute at issue here as not authorizing...
This is completely different. Obviously, a person can't be allowed to languish in prison indefinitely because no country will take him. That doesn't make any sense. But that's not this situation. This fellow is within, you know, a couple of months probably of a final resolution of his status. And if it turns out he can't be sent back to Pakistan or he can't be sent to another country, then he will get out, right?
Your Honor, it isn't just about whether or not his removal is reasonably foreseeable, which it's not. It is about the length of detention, which Zedvitas did talk about.
There's
the length of detention.
Nothing can be done about that. He can't get damages, right, for his detention.
No, but what can be done about it is to end the violation of his legal rights and to permit him to be released now.
So he's out for 1 month before we decide the case? For that, we should jump through all these hoops that you've offered us? So he can get out, so he can have a month of liberty with a
Your
electronic
Honor,
bracelet or something?
I see that my time is about to be up, and I'd like to save a little time for rebuttal, so if I may.
That's fine. Okay, thank you, Ms. Bennett. Mr. Ginsburg?
May it please the Court, Douglas Ginsburg for the Department of Justice, representing the respondent here. I'm not quite sure what to add after the Court's questions there. I would point out that the petitioner had a difficult decision to make recently, and that is whether to seek a stay or not to seek a stay. And that also had important implications, I think, for this case. until the court granted the stay of removal yesterday, we were actually in the Zad Vidas 180 period of time, which meant that on May 12th of 2008, the 180 days would have run, and petitioner could have then attempted to make a claim under Zad Vidas, trying to establish that there was no significant likelihood of repatriation. By filing a stay, they did two things. One is they stopped that period, at least pending this court's resolution for review.
What is this, really? I mean, this is too ridiculous. What is going on here?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Your Honor.
Why should Zadidas be affected by whether he has a stay of removal now? I don't get that. Anyway, there's no rigid 180-day. It's just it's not a statute or anything. It's just the Supreme Court saying, you know, people shouldn't be, general rule shouldn't be kept more than 6 months after the final order of removal.
That's correct.
You're turning into the Speedy Trial Act.
Well, what it does, it gives the government, after the removal order becomes executable, and the government then is in a position to attempt to effect the removal, it gives the government 180 days to do what is necessary to, in fact, effectuate the removal.
The stay doesn't affect your ability to ask Pakistan whether it'll promise not to torture Hussein if he's sent back, or to ask the other 191 countries in the world whether any of them would like 190, whether any of them would like to have him, to which the answer, I assume, is no. So.
Well, I'm not sure that's entirely correct, though. As a matter of diplomatic protocols and practicalities, to be able to approach...
The stay doesn't have anything to do with whether you can make diplomatic representations to Pakistan.
Making a contact in diplomatic contacts to third countries is obviously not, particularly in a case regarding assurances on a torture claim, is not something done every day. To do that in a case which is, one could say hypothetically, because we don't have an executable final order, is not something that's done.
I don't believe that.
Where
did you get that from? Is that what you were told by the State Department, or is that a lawyer's argument?
I think that's the practice, in these types of cases. I certainly have not seen any cases, and I work with these, where they approach the foreign countries for diplomatic assurances prior to there being an executable final order. You don't want to use up that diplomatic capital and the diplomatic process. But in any event, I think the larger point in this case...
If the stay had been denied, he still would have... What, you would have tried to remove him immediately? Is that it, or what?
If the stay had been denied, we would be in a position to either get the assurances, attempt to get the assurances, and if we get them, to begin that process of removing him, because that would lift the CAT grant, or to apply to other countries... they mentioned,
but his petition for review would still be alive.
That's true, and he could pursue that from abroad.
Pardon?
He could pursue that from abroad. Aliens can continue their petitions from review after they've been removed.
But the case is going to be decided before you can complete your diplomatic minuet with Pakistan.
Well, that's possible, and we don't know what Pakistan would say.
There's much ado about nothing. And you, like your opponent, you're just complicating an already absurdly complicated legal regime.
Well, to make it simple, I think at essence what this case is about, and at least what I understand their argument to be, is that there is no longer any immigration-related purpose to this detention. And that clearly is not true. We now have a final order of removal. It's what was executable and hopefully will be executable again after the petition for review process is completed, at which point we can attempt to effect the removal.
And you say the Zad Vidas rule, the six-month rule, runs from the date of the final administrative order, not the final judicial order? Where do you get that from?
In the first instance, it would run when there's no stay in effect, and therefore the order is executable. It runs from the date that the removal order becomes
Why?
Final.
Why?
That's how the statute defines the removal period. And then there's 90 days after that.
Yeah, but how does the Supreme Court decision resolve that question? Where you start there? Did they decide that?
Well, they didn't, not with explicit language did they say that's exactly where it starts. But the government needs to be able to execute the order, and it has 180 days to do it. So it certainly makes sense that it would begin, at least in the first instance, when the removal order becomes final.
I don't know what
can I ask you something here? This, I'm a little curious about this all this terrorism allegation, which to me, maybe there's different degrees of terrorism or something, but it seems pretty weak in this case, the claim that he's a terrorist, plus the immigration judge who heard all the evidence here obviously wasn't too moved by that because he would have permitted this fellow to be out on bond while his proceedings were working their way through the system.
Well, after the removal hearing, the bond decision by the IJ initially was prior to the removal hearing. And after the removal hearing, they had 3 days of testimony, after which the immigration judge found that he was a founding member and a high-level member of this organization, which did engage in terrorist activity. So I don't think that case is weak. That's not to say there was evidence that he was a bomb thrower.
Well, what does that mean in the specifics of this situation in Pakistan? This is a political party, as I understand it, representing people who were returned from India to Pakistan. They're basically not. I don't know how that distinction is made between those who migrated from other points as opposed to India. But doesn't it represent those people? And then there was a falling out within that organization that led to a lot of violence. Is that the specifics of this?
Well, that's certainly true that there was an organization which ultimately split, and then the original and the newly created faction engaged in substantial internecine fighting between themselves, but also involving the broader community as well. And there was finding that they met the definition of terrorist organizations and engaged in terrorist acts, and he was a leader.
I don't see the connection between that and the detention. He's not a threat to the United States. So why shouldn't he be allowed out on bail in the United States?
Well, you know, prior to the removal order being issued, he was detained under 1226C, which said that if you're deportable under the terrorism provisions, which includes people who gave material support to terrorist organizations and therefore engaged in terrorist activity, as that's defined, must be detained.
So it's just a mindless rule.
It's based on congressional findings upheld in Kim versus DeMoore. That
would be a terrorist on our side, wouldn't it?
Well, he's a terrorist
on our side.
Well, certainly, DHS would have the prosecutorial discretion never to put.
Pardon?
Certainly, the DHS would have prosecutorial discretion not to put somebody in removal proceedings at all. If there were really somebody on our side and somebody we wanted to support, but as a matter of prosecutorial discretion, proceedings were commenced, and the statute required that he be detained. I think now that there's...
Well, he wasn't originally charged with terrorism, as I understand it. He was found to be a terrorist, but I'm not sure how he got into that position.
Well, he was charged with and found deportable basis on fraud in his entry. He applied for asylum and other forms of relief and was found barred for those forms of relief and protection because of his fact that he was found to have engaged terrorist activity.
His status as a terrorist, was that ever explored in an administrative proceeding?
Absolutely.
Or was that just assumed on the basis of this situation in Pakistan?
Well, it was adjudicated in the two parallel tracks in this proceeding. One is in the bond proceeding, where the immigration judge found that he, in fact, engaged in terrorist activity, and then later confirmed that in the removal hearing, that those findings were affirmed by the board. And that was one of the basis for the final removal order and the denial of his asylum and withholding claims. So we have two adjudications that he, in fact...
Well, he was also found, I gather, not to be a threat to society or in risk of flight, right?
Well, no, that's not true. That was an inaccurate statement made by petitioner. The immigration judge originally found that he was, in fact, a threat to the community and a danger to the national security. That he was.
Community or?
Excuse me?
Threat to the United States?
Yes.
Really? What would they think he was going to do in the United States?
Well, based on the findings that he didn't get.
Pakistan embassy or something?
Well, he did encourage demonstrations and things while in the United States.
Do what?
He organized demonstrations on behalf of this organization, which was found to be a terrorist organization. But the immigration judge later on a bond redetermination after his convictions were vacated, again, credited DHS's concerns that he was a flight risk. And a threat to the national security, a threat to the community. And the immigration judge credited that, but then released him on bond anyway. That got appealed to the board, and the board said, board reversed. The immigration judge said, you need to go back and do the 236 mandatory detention analysis. And if you find he's not subject to mandatory detention, and you find he's a flight risk, you can't give him bond. So effectively vacated any flight risk danger and said the immigration was wrong in finding flight risk and danger and granting bond anyway.
Can you clear up another thing for me here? That the conviction that was set aside, government moved to dismiss it when it was on appeal here. You said that the evidence that was not disclosed had nothing to do with his guilt or innocence. And that, I mean, it's my understanding of Brady is that's exculpatory evidence that has to be disclosed. If it doesn't go to guilt or innocence, it doesn't have to be disclosed. So what was the government saying when it agrees to dismiss the conviction while it's on appeal?
Well, I think there's other grounds for a new trial other than just evidence which goes to guilt or innocence. I think the standard is just interest of justice. In the criminal
world. Well, what's the interest of justice if there's nothing that goes to guilt or innocence that was withheld?
Well, I think, again, this was a matter of prosecutorial discretion that the prosecutors in the case felt that it would be unfair for this conviction to stand in light of the fact that they recently came into that information, but wanted to make it clear it did not go to his guilt or innocence. But it's probably something that, going forward, they would not want to prosecute the case necessarily without having disclosed that, and so they moved to vacate. But
I just don't understand what obligation there is to disclose something if it doesn't go to guilt or innocence on the charge.
I'm not sure what the minds of the prosecutors and what other interests of justice they felt beyond that. But I also think it's important that after the convictions were vacated, that DHS then went and withdrew charges which were based on those convictions. And the remaining charge, which he was found deportable on, which was the fraud charge, really wasn't related to the conviction. And the terrorism grounds for which he was detained and found ineligible for relief really also weren't affected by the conviction based on separate findings and adjudications. My light's on. If there's no further questions.
I'm really puzzled by your opening point, how you treat this 6 months Zedvitas presumption. So your notion is this some rule that DHS has issued interpreting Zedvitas, or what? Is there such a thing?
Well, there is a regulatory scheme, at 8 CFR 241.4, which says what happens once the order becomes
final. This is a post-Zedvitas regulation?
Yes.
And what does it say?
It basically tracks the statute and says...
Zedvitas is not about the statute. Zedvitas is about this, 6 month presumption created by the Supreme Court. So what does...
Well, purported to be an interpretation of the statute. Zedvitas was not a constitutional holding.
It creates the six-month presumption. Now, what does the regulation say about the presumption?
Well, what the regulation says is that for 90 days after the removal order becomes final...
Administratively final. Is that your interpretation?
Well, administratively final, and I'm told practice is now that there's a stay, 90 days after a stay.
Forget the stay, would you please? What does the regulation say?
The regulation says that after 90 days, he will get a post-order custody review.
After the 6 months?
Well, at the end of 6 months, then another...
You lost me completely.
All right, 90 days.
What is the sequence according to this regulation? So an order is affirmed by the BIA. Is that the first step?
Correct.
Okay, what happens?
90 days thereafter, a post-order custody review is undertaken to determine whether he represents a flight risk or a danger. And if he is, detention is continued. If he's not, he's released. At the end of the following 90-day period, 180 days, they have to do the repatriation analysis called for by Zadvydas. If it's determined then that there's no significant likelihood of repatriation in the reasonably foreseeable future, again, he would be released. If it's determined that repatriation is still practicable or that he has not cooperated in repatriation efforts, he could be detained longer.
But now but this regulation says that that second 90 days doesn't start to run if there's a stay of removal.
It's more complicated.
Naturally, it's more complicated, right? Because it has to be ridiculously complicated. You're not happy.
Repatriation efforts. Well, I believe it's deemed that because he sought a stay and, in fact, has blocked his removal, that he has acted, he's basically suspended the removal period by doing
that. Answer my question. 90 days, first 90 days post-custody review, and they decide they should retain him. Okay, so he's still in jail. So now he's got 90 days before you have to do something, before you have to begin your repatriation analysis.
Right.
Now, if during that period he gets a stay of removal, what happens in as simple a formula as you can give us?
Well, if there's a stay, he'll still get a 90-day review initially regarding whether he's a threat or a flight risk. But the 180 days is not deemed to run.
Look. We're past the first 90 days.
The second 90 days, the end period in the Zadvydas 180-day period, is not deemed to run because of the stay. Correct. That's why he's potentially
that
prolonged his own detention here.
That seems to be inconsistent with Zadvydas. Because, look, Zadvydas says your repatriation analysis starts after the 180 days. Right? So there's no reason to restart the 90-day clock because the 90 days is not when you have to release them. It's when you have to conduct your repatriation analysis.
The statute does restart the clock also. Now it's what was being interpreted in Zadvydas.
So why is the stay relevant to anything?
Because the stay is what restarts the clock.
But why?
Because under 241A2 of the INA, it says
did you bring this to the attention of this court when the stay was requested?
We found out that the stay was granted 5 minutes after we found out that the stay motion was filed, literally. So the government did not respond to the stay motion. Stay motion was filed on Monday.
Anyway.
We found out about it yesterday morning, and I immediately called the court.
Let me understand this again. I don't get it. All the Supreme Court said was that after the 6 months, or it's after the second 90 days, the alien has a chance. I'm reading it. Once the alien provides good reason to believe there's no significant likelihood of removal in the reasonable foreseeable future, the government must respond with evidence sufficient to rebut that showing. I don't see anything in this to suggest that granting a stay of removal would have any effect.
I think it depends how you define what the start point on the 180 days is. If you look at 241A2 of the INA, it says that where a stay is obtained, that the removal period begins at the expiration of the petition for review period, when there's a final order from
what
the court.
What removal period begins? The second 90 days?
Well, the removal period is what generally starts when the removal order is issued. When it's a stay is sought, the statute reads the later of when the removal order is entered or when the stay is sought and received when the court issues its final decision. So
it can't affect the second 90 days. That's not in the statute.
Well, the provision being construed by the Supreme Court was 241A6, which is the period of discretionary detention, which takes place after the expiration of the 90-day removal period. The removal period doesn't deem to begin until the court completes and adjudicates the petition for review. That's what 241A2 says. This is why by filing for the stay, I think they have potentially prolonged the detention. They've dragged out the 180-day period.
Well, I would be grateful if within 10 days you could submit a supplemental brief explaining why a stay of removal affects the 6-month rule of sed vitis. And if the petitioner wants to respond, then can do so within, say, 7 days. Okay.
Thank you, Ron.
So thank you, Mr. Ginsburg. So, Ms. Bennett, how much time? 2 minutes? Anything further?
Thank you. Just a couple of points I want to make. First of all, a very practical point about the concern the question about whether or not, in fact, this may all be over very quickly and therefore it's really not an issue. There are several reasons why, in fact, it's not going to be over very quickly. Even if this court were to expedite, it will take a while for the court to decide the merits. In addition to that, the government has made clear that it feels it is entitled to, at a minimum, an additional 6 months' detention after this court issues its decision on the petition for removal. In addition to that, after the petition for removal is decided, it is very possible that the case would be remanded. There are other things that could happen in this case, such as the government has mentioned it may seek attorney general certification. It also has a motion for reconsideration pending before the BIA. All of that is to go to the, as complicated as all of that is, it goes to the fundamental and ultimately simple point, which is that there is no reasonably foreseeable end to Mr. Hussein's detention in sight. And if he is not granted relief by this court, he will have to come back with a habeas in another 6 months or a year or 2 years, again seeking relief, because he's not going to be released unless he's afforded relief by this court. The legal issues are whether or not he can continue to be detained under these circumstances, or another way to look at it is, can he be subjected to mandatory detention without a bond hearing?
It's clear the government is so pig-headed that it will continue its strenuous efforts to thwart your case. I mean, they're going to put Zed Vitas under serious strain if they keep on this, right?
As a practical matter, Your Honor, it's clear that the end of his detention is nowhere near in sight unless this court grants him relief, either in the form of ordering his release or, if the court is concerned that might not be appropriate, an alternative remedy, although we don't think it's needed here, would be to order him a bond hearing. He doesn't need that because the immigration judge already decided he can be released, and the immigration judge had a complete record before him relating to both danger and flight risk. The last point that I wanted to make is just, again, returning to Belanti, it would be an extension of that decision to rule that just because there's a petition for review pending, this court's habeas jurisdiction to decide whether his detention is authorized by statute is not in force, and we don't think that it's certainly not dictated by Belanti. We don't think that would be appropriate here. Rather, this decision is in the nature of the decision made in Gonzalez, Sedvitas, Clark. All of those were habeas decisions, considering constitutional and statutory authority arguments such as those made here.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. and Mr. Ginsburg.